Now, if you rely on advice like this to make decisions about buying insurance or setting up a budget, you are not alone. These days, you can turn on the radio, the TV, open up a magazine, or fire up a website and get all kinds of advice about how to handle your money. But did you know that before there was Susie Orman, before there were our own Alvin Hall or Luis Barajas, there was just one, Sylvia Porter, who basically invented the genre. Now there is a new biography about her, amazingly the first. It's titled Sylvia Porter, America's Original Personal Finance Columnist. The author is Tracy Luke, who teaches journalism at Iowa State University, and she's with us now from Iowa Public Radio in Ames. Professor Luke, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You know, you remind us that at one point in the 60s and 70s, Sylvia Porter was one of the best known, one of the most admired women of her time. Mm-hmm. She was a nationally syndicated newspaper columnist. She wrote books. Mm-hmm. She was on Meet the Press. She had a column in Ladies Home Journal. But you're too young to remember all that. So how did you get interested in her story?
Well, I came across her while I was doing research in graduate school. And I'm somewhat embarrassed to admit that I had not known who she was. And I started doing some research and realized what she had done and how significant she was. And to be honest, I was shocked that nobody had written about her in this way before.
As was I, to be honest. So, mm-hmm. So thank you for this. How did she get into financial writing to begin with?
Well, it's just a fascinating story. She started writing during the Depression, when women were not usually hired to cover finance for newspapers. But she had majored in economics at Hunter College. She changed her major after the market crash of 1929 because she wanted to understand how this had happened. And she also wanted to write for a general audience. Several news outlets would not hire her. Finally, the New York Post did in 1935. And she wrote under the byline of S.F. Porter to hide the fact that she was a woman. Now, she became so popular with readers because she was very adept at boiling down complicated topics into average, everyday language that regular people could understand. And from there, she just built a following and she expanded it to include a magazine column, books, media appearances.
She was a personal brand before we even knew what that was.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, and you talked about the fact that she was, if I could use this term, evangelical about trying to explain complicated mm-hmm. concepts to people. She said, in fact, you quote her this way. She says, I feel that I'm conducting what almost amounts to a crusade to try
That's
to
right.
put these economic developments that affect everything we do into language which the average man and woman can not only understand but will want to read because they are really interested. What was it about that was so revolutionary at the time?
Well, at the time, most financial news was written for the business class or for the wealthy, people who had money and, you know, wanted information that was right up their alley. She took the middle class seriously, and she began writing for regular people. She thought it was immoral for large corporations and large investors to profit at the expense of regular Americans. And so that is why she engaged in a crusade to increase people's financial literacy. She wanted us all to understand all of this stuff so that we could make better decisions with our money and also with our votes.
You know, it's interesting that you write about the fact that she was this kind of interesting bundle of contradictions, if I can put it that way. You
say
that
very much
she was in a lot of ways a populist in that she wrote for the little guy, for Mr. Uh-huh. and Mrs. America. Mm-hmm. But she had some, how can we describe this? Some, I don't know how to describe
blind spots,
if you will, about why don't you characterize it?
Okay, so she did have a lot of blind spots that came with her success, and that came from, in some ways, where thinking on issues, for instance, related to equality were at the time. She was a proponent of professional women's rights. She wanted a level playing field, but she wrote about and thought about equality. She didn't talk about difference. And so that led her to have a certain bias in terms of class. She really believed that everybody, if they were given a level playing field, that you really could succeed if you wanted to. And that led her, I think, to paper over some of the differences in experiences that people of color were having, that people of the working class were having, and so on.
Give some examples.
She wrote a lot about what she called the servant problem. Meaning the trouble that she in particular was having in finding what she would consider good household help. And so
that pesky help.
That's right. And so, yeah, that led her to...
So she didn't really see these women as working women, too.
I think that she would not see them at her level. And I think that's what her bias was. You know, she was a bit of an elitist in that particular way. And she didn't think that as the employer of domestic workers that she should have to pay their portion, the employer's portion of Social Security. However, she also felt that they would not necessarily be responsible enough to pay their own share of Social Security. You know, so there were some contradictions in her writing in those ways.
Do you have any idea how she sorted all that out in her mind?
Well, you know, if I'm honest, I think that she wrote 5 days a week. So she was writing a column every day. And I think that she didn't necessarily step back very often from her work and look at it in its entirety. She was a brilliant economist. I mean, that's really undeniable. But on a personal level, I don't think that she really had the awareness to step back and examine consistencies or inconsistencies in her thinking.
What do you think her legacy is today? It's interesting that, in a way, the shine came off her reputation later in her career, in part because of the very thing you talk about. I mean, she was writing so much, and that she started to delegate some of this work, not just to household help, but also to ghostwriters.
That's right.
And they didn't always attend to the quality of the work to the degree that they might have. And kind of some of the shine came off her reputation. Mm-hmm. So what do you think her legacy is? And do you have a theory about why it is that we don't remember her in the way we do other women pioneers? So two things. What do you think her legacy is? And why do you think she is not better known at this point?
Yeah, I would say that it's perhaps her large impact that has contributed to the fact that we don't remember her as much as we might. And the reason I say that is because, as you mentioned, personal finance has become so ubiquitous. We see it everywhere. So I think it's so almost, I don't want to say ordinary, but it's so familiar to us that perhaps we haven't questioned its origins. And I think that speaks to her legacy, to how influential she was. But perhaps it's led us to look at what she did as maybe less notable than we would look at, say, Eleanor Roosevelt.
I don't know if you feel comfortable speculating about this, but having done this deep dive into her work, if she were alive today, what do you think she'd be writing about?
Well, she would be all over income inequality. We've been hearing about what the gap is, the biggest that it's been, I think, ever. And certainly for a while, we were making comparisons with the 1920s, you know, leading up to the crash of 1929. But she would be writing about that in terms of what it means for us as a country, what it has meant historically, and the potential consequences of it. She would also have been all over subprime lenders and the mortgage crisis. I found myself actually in 2008 wishing that she were still with us, because she would have, I think, taken the banks to task, because she sided with the little guy. And I think that she would have been mortified by a lot of what was going on at the time.
Tracy Luke is the author of Sylvia Porter, America's Original Personal Finance Columnist. She's also an assistant professor in the Greenlee School of Journalism at Iowa State University, and she joined us from Iowa Public Radio, which is in Ames, Iowa. Professor Luke, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Just ahead, often kids know exactly what they want for the holidays.
Ralphie, what would you like for Christmas?
I want an official Red Ryder carbine action 200 yard range ball arrow.
No, shoot your eye out.
So, yeah, sometimes parents need to step on the brakes, but when? To send a message, and if so, which one? We'll head into our parenting roundtable to talk about the toy wars. That's coming up on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.